sports leader.
Football feast.
Who's got it better than us?
No way!
One, two, three. Ah. Love Strain. As in the Love Covenant rolls into the second hour of the presentation. Put a bow on who has it better than us, nobody, week number three. The Detroit Lions with the analyst, Pete Bursich, in the next segment, about 10:15, 10:20. It's a Brett Blakemore production today. And 9 to noon in the Love Covenant, say good morning on A Talker Tuesday. Make it a good one for you, your friends, and your families today. It's the Lions. It's the Lions. As a beloved co-worker once said, week three, nooner at U.S. Bank Stadium. Who has it better than us? Is it the Detroit Lions? They beat us last year on that fat Cam Dantzler L you heard into the previous segment. Back left of the end zone. Amon-Ra St. Brown. And the defense in that game, early December, Ford Field, the Minnesota Vikings defense allowed Goff to go 75 in a minute 50, converting a bunch of third downs and winning it on a fourth and game from the 11. That would be an L for the day. That would be an L for the season. Seriously. I mean, they're up and down the field. That was a common thread last year. I mean, the Charlotte game. I mean, the Sam Darnold was, Zimmer's defense made Sam Darnold look ridiculous. Then all of a sudden on the final Carolina Kitties drive of regulation, Sam Darnold starts at like his 4 or his 6. Finds this beef-eating tight end over the middle of the field, I think on a big fourth down, and he was kind of uncovered. Robbie Anderson out here looking like a combo between Steve Smith and Mohsin Mohamed. And then in that game, that was an underrated Cam Dantzler Al, because Dantzler kept letting Robbie Anderson get out of bounds. It's like he would catch a pass and, God, keep him in. No, Robbie Anderson out of bounds. And then they scored, and then they got the 2. And then Joseph tried to walk off from like 55-60 right into the wind. Didn't work, but then Kirk went cold-blooded to KJ, and we left winners. But that was one of those situations we talked about in the previous segment, where you can have all the talent in the world, preferably have no distractions, copyright Bud Grant, but can you handle pressure? Can you close on things? And that was one where they did. In the first game against the Lions here, the Vikings closed on a victory that the game never should have been in question. And God bless Alexander Mattison. He had like a 125 in that game, just running roughshod on everything that was Honolulu blue and silver. But then he fumbles at like the 25-yard line with like 2 minutes to go or even less than that. And, you know, now all of a sudden, Jared Goff, there he is, touchdown. Jared Goff, there he is, 2-point conversion. No. A game the Lions lost, very talented receiver, I believe he was a Scotty, Quintez Cephas. Now Cephas was one of those underrated receivers from that big-time 2020 wide receiver draft, like KJ. That, I mean, it's the gift that just keeps on giving. Are you kidding me with all these good receivers from that 2020 draft? They Madison fumble, they get the touchdown in the 2, but then this is at U.S. Bank Stadium. Cousins murders them, because that's what happens to the Lions, inevitably. Cousins murders them for 46 yards in 25 seconds, and Joseph walks off from 54 west into the palace. So who has it better than us? Week three, the Detroit Lions. Minnesota Vikings offense with the what should be the preferred 11 in a game where there are personnel changes du jour. Minnesota moving company left to right as of now, in my opinion. Left tackle, Christian Darrisaw. Ezra Cleveland, Garrett Bradbury, former Dolphin Jesse Davis, and right tackle Brian O'Neill. Now, the right guard situation, you know, as we said, more so in the who has it better than us nobody Eagles piece than the Packers piece, I'd bet Davis starts at right guard. Does he hold the position for the season? And when I say Davis, it's not the second-year Ohio State guy, Wyatt Davis, where he should be in the conversation. Quite honestly, for my taste, he's not. But Ed Ingram, the second-round pick from LSU in the 2022, he has an opportunity to jump into that conversation. But for now, off what I've seen and or what I know, Davis starts. And I'd say he probably starts in this one, week three, the Palatial Purple Paradise noon game against them kiddies. So you got the moving company, then you got Irv. All right, so we'll go one tight end. Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, K.J. Osborne, three wide receiver set, Dalvin and Kirk. That's the Vikings offense. The Lions offense, who has it better than us? Some of those kiddies. The Michigan moving company, left to right, Taylor Decker, left tackle, seems like he's injured every minute of his life, but when he does play, he's quite good. Jonah Jackson, left guard. Frank Ragnow, Chan Hassan's finest, center. Halapulavati Vaitai. Watch your language in front of a ladies, punk. Super special Vaitai, right guard. And second-year first-round pick Penei Sewell gets to play right tackle. Now, Penei Sewell played left tackle last year, and he was out of position by admission of their coach, Dan Campbell. He's going back to a position they're telling us he prefers. Decker, Jonah Jackson, Ragnow, Halapulavati Vaitai, and Penei Sewell. Tight end T.J. Hockenson. Running back DeAndre Swift. Their 1-2 ain't bad with the former Packer Jamal Williams. Amon-Ra St. Brown, D.J. Chark, and Josh Reynolds are listed as their top three. I'm telling you right now, Quintez Cephas, when he's healthy, he's going to beat somebody out of that spot. I would bet it was Reynolds. The Lions, through organized team activities and minicamp, they're selling that because Goff played with Reynolds with the Rams, then that's going to be like an immediate Hall & Oates, Peaches and Herb, Brooks and Dunn-like connection. I'm like, from afar, my man, it's Josh Reynolds. Yeah, and you know, I mean, Jared Goff, I've always had respect for Jared, and he's better than in a fantasy football culture. He doesn't put up big numbers, so therefore, fantasy football freakazoids are going to be kind of like, well, ain't that good. Well, that's what they said about Eli and Joe Flacco until the playoffs rolled around, and you know, they had a combined three Super Bowl MVPs. Box, pressure, man, pressure. When it gets hot, can you handle the pressure? Can you be consistent? Those are the separators. Personally and professionally, quite frequently. Quintez Cephas, this is a nice receiver, man. So I think he beats Josh Reynolds. So I'd go St. Brown, Chark Shark, and or Cephas. Jared Goff's the quarterback. Vikings win the quarterback pairing between those two, but by how much? Because again, Goff has done something. I mean, if you just look at the stats in a fantasy football culture, Cousins kills Goff. I mean, it's yards per attempt for the most part, the yards per game, the touchdown to interception ratio, and the majority of the analytics will go the way of Kirk Cousins, who has a dramatically better arm than Jared Goff. Now, Goff found a way to do something Kirk has never found a way to do, and that's to get to the Super Bowl. And it doesn't matter how much you hit me with, well, yeah, but I mean, Todd Gurley, okay, Dalvin. Yeah, Sean McVay, okay. I mean, McVay has had myriad opportunities to get Goff and or certain players to the Super Bowl, and he did it once with Jared, then he did it with Matthew, and he won it. Don't get me wrong here. McVay is one of the, if not the best coaches in the National Football League, and that's more so than being an elite offensive mind. It's now that I'm getting to know more about him and how they do things there from some of the people we have here who were there, it's my respect for Sean McVay and my level of appreciation for how he handles man, specifically during a pandemic like time, and then to where we are now. McVay's one of the best coaches in the NFL. So I got a lot of respect for that, but you still got to get out there and do it, man, and you got to not be afraid. And you have to have your head on the cliched swivel, and you have to make those big third down passes. Jared Goff did it, and he did it again, and again, and again, and again, and again, and it got to the Super Bowl. So when I say Vikes win the quarterback situation here, Cousins wins. I would take Cousins before I would take Goff, but it's not by as much as a lot of people tell me they want it to be. Dalvin wins the running back situation with DeAndre Swift. But again, he doesn't crush, you know, because Dalvin will miss games. DeAndre will miss games. Williams catches. Madison runs. After that, what are we going to do with Kanae Wong-Wu and or the speedy North Carolina kid by way of Tennessee, Ty Chandler? So Dalvin wins that, and Dalvin would be selected over DeAndre Swift by 95% of general managers in a player-for-player draft. He wins it, but with all due respect to DeAndre Swift, he ain't winning it by 10 lengths. He might have won it by 4. If healthy, the Lions get offensive line on name value alone. Decker, Ragnow, Sewell, all former first-round picks. Darrisaw, Bradbury, first-round picks. Now, Frank Ragnow, when he's healthy, he is the best center in the NFL. So that tilts the conversation a little bit there for me. So when I say the Michigan Moving Company gets the dub here on name value alone, that's because if you tell me, and everybody's healthy, you got the Ohio State kid at left tackle, and then the second-year guy finally playing his right spot full-time, and the best center in the NFL, that right there is really difficult to get around. Taylor Decker's a hell of a football player when he's healthy, but he's sustained a bunch of injury-related L's. And their left guard, Jonah Jackson, I mean, with all due respect, Ezra's already better, and Jesse Davis has a chance to be better. Vitae is a tackle by trade playing guard, and Vitae is a guy who, I like him. I like him, I don't love him. He, you know, he won that Super Bowl with the Eagles, and he's a multifaceted guy who can do a lot of different things well, but really nothing great. But the Michigan Moving Company, with all due respect to my favorite team, I have to give them the nod until proven otherwise. Irv can play with TJ Hockenson. Now, Hockenson gets the dub because he's played longer and he's played more games. Irv can play with TJ Hockenson. That's the end of that story. Will he? First and foremost, as a pass protector and a run blocker, TJ Hockenson is not in Irv Smith Jr.'s class. But Irv's coming off a season where he didn't play. And TJ's proven to be a better red zone threat, but that's also born of opportunity. Wide receivers, JJ and Thielen win the receiver bid. You can have St. Brown. You can have Cephas, Chark, Reynolds. You can have them all. Jefferson and Thielen win the wide receiver bit by themselves, not even a discussion. Now, defensively, and we'll get into this with the analyst around the corner, for the Vikings, the 11 that I think will play most, and, you know, this involves nickel defense, which is played about 68% of the time. Up front, Harrison Phillips at the nose, Dalvin Tomlinson, DJ Wonnum, defensive ends in a 3-4. Za'Darius Smith, Danielle Hunter, Eric Kendricks. Those are the linebackers that will play most. Patrick Peterson, Andrew Booth Jr., the Clemson rookie, Chandon Sullivan, the nickel, Hitman, and first rounder Lewis Seen. Those will be the Vikings who will play most unless somebody takes an injury out. For the Lions, it's getting better incrementally. defensive ends would be Aiden Hutchinson, the first-round pick, and he's a badass. I mean, Lions fans are going to love him. Charles Harris, because Romeo Okwara is coming back from an Achilles. Inside, Michael Brockers and Aleem McNeil. Linebackers who should play the most definitely would be Alex Anzalone and Derek Barnes. And they got, you know, those will be their nickel linebackers. In the secondary, Jeff Okuda, Amani Oru Warrier, and Okuda, speaking of injuries, and Oru Warrier, talented. Will Harris is their nickel. Their safeties are Tracy Walker and Deshaun Elliott. Pete Bursich joins 9 to noon around the corner to extend the defensive portion of the Who Has It Better Than Us Nobody, the Detroit Lions episode.
Duh, fan. The Fan and Hilltop Camper and RV are trying to put a grand in your hand with our national cash contest. Head to KFAN.com, enter the keyword bank. That is bank for your shot to win $1,000. KFAN.com, keyword bank.
Oh my God! No way! High fives for everybody!
What's going on there, Mr. Analyst?
Good morning, Mr. Allen. How are you?
Good morning, Mr. Peter Bursich. I'm doing, first of all, thanks for making time for the radio show. Secondly, a couple of weeks ago, a week and a half ago, started this. Who has it better than us? Nobody. Went through the Packers, right. went through the Eagles, and it's a week-by-week deal, a team-by-team deal. And so, therefore, what I'm doing is I'm taking, like, the 11 that I and we believe will play most for the Vikings offense and Vikings defense, and conversely doing it with the adversary. And I just got done with the Lions offense and just kind of talking it out on the fly as we are wont to do. It's I left the Alabama rookie, Jameson Williams, out of the equation because yes, he can't get on the field. I mean, we'll figure out if he has it better than us when the man gets on the field and overcomes whatever, I think it's recovering from an ACL, but I mean, I can't put him in the mix and guess how he's going to do, even when you don't have any rookie or mini camp steam. You know what I mean?
Absolutely right. I mean, they don't even know what they have in Aiden Hutchinson yet. I mean, it's going into it. You said he was the safest pick that you could find. For Detroit, especially being he's a Michigan kid, went to Michigan, staying in Michigan. So you just don't know. And, you know, yeah, he's pretty safe, but at the same time, they haven't even put pads on yet. You don't even know what you have.
Yeah.
And, I think it's a little bit tougher for rookies to get in the swing because they just do not have the preseason like they used to. So it's kind of baptism under fire more so than ever.
Analyst at Pete Bursich for Hardcore Football Takes. Follow him as 9 to noon does. Do you think it's fair when I say, because of all of the first-round equity the Lions have put into the Michigan Moving Company? Now, as I mentioned, Taylor Decker seems to be hurt every day of his life, but when he's not hurt or missing time, he's pretty darn good. I think Frank Ragnow's the best center in the NFL. And then you have Penei Sewell, second year for that high pick, and they're getting him to the position they believe he will be best. Now, with Vitae at right guard and Jonah Jackson at left guard, I think Jonah Jackson has some L to him. That was off intel last year and also by watching back the games. So for the Vikings, Minnesota Moving Company, Darisaw Cleveland Bradbury, the former Dolphin Jesse Davis, I believe will be the starting right guard when we play Green Bay, unless Ed Ingram comes charging at him, and then Brian O'Neill. So I gave the Michigan Moving Company the W there by like a nose. Do you think I'm wrong?
You know what? I think that's a close one. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that there's what the Vikings do have on offensive line is a lot of potential. And by that, I mean, I don't, you know, and they've had a new coordinator for, you know, almost every season. The only real question mark is going to be that right guard spot. You know, they're all getting a new name.
Yep.
New faces, new coaches, new style. So, you know, we'll see how they fit into it. And you know, I look at Detroit's offensive line, Decker with the injury problems, and you know, Halapulivati Vaitai, I just love saying his name. So he's my favorite right guard in the business, of course.
Always.
But Penei Sewell turned out, remember he was so high in the draft. He turned out to be, he's a damn good run blocker, but he was absolutely behind the eight ball and lost when it came to pass protection. And whatever that was, maybe the flip over the other side will help him out. But he's a one-sided offensive lineman right now, you know, and he's had some time. So you gotta have this guy stay healthy over there. You gotta have this guy play better over at the right side over there. You know, Ragnow, I think, is good. I don't know if he's the best, but he's good. He's a good player. So I don't know. I like our offensive line and the potential that it has. We have some, you know, Darrisaw, he was coming into the season injured, so we missed him in the beginning. But between Darrisaw and the rest of them, I think our group is going to be, I'd rather have our group going into the season, to be honest with you.
Okay. Now for them, because Romeo Okwara, who's okay, I mean, he's good, but he's not like high end. He's coming off an Achilles. Mm-hmm. So I laid it out, Aiden Hutchinson and Charles Harris for their bookenders. Michael Brockers and Aleem McNeil as the defensive linemen they probably will use most. Conversely, for the Vikings, Harrison Phillips, DJ Wonnum, Dalvin Tomlinson, then they'll find ways to get Hunter and Za'Darius Smith in the game, obviously in nickel situations. So that whole conglomerate there, that favors the Vikings, right?
I think so. I mean, I love Aleem McNeil. I think he's a very, very good interior defensive lineman. But they're just missing depth, right? I mean, it's depth and it's guys staying healthy. I mean, that's kind of it's amazing how that's the story with the Lions, right? They've spent, really the last season or two just trying to get rid of dead cap space, right? We played them one time, and I believe that they had almost $68 million in dead cap space, money that they were paying to people to just go away, just to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think they're still in the rebuilding mode. And I'm telling you, when you have a season like the Lions did last year, it leaves a mark on guys. You know, it really does. And so if that group stays healthy, I think we're lacking some depth at some positions. We need to find the right defensive end for third down, I believe, so you can move Za'Darius Smith around. He's an unbelievably good interior pass rusher on third down situations. And, you know, you look at, we did the, you know, film study on him as a free agent, and you start watching where his pressures and sacks came from, and a lot of them were just right up the middle. Right. And if you move him over to the other side with Danielle Hunter, now you've got two guys on one side that are going to cause you a lot of problems, and you're going to have to turn the center that way and do all these other things. Well, then that gives you the opportunity to blitz off the other side. I mean, there's a lot of potential, I think, there when you have, two defensive linemen that absolutely have to be accounted for on third down.
Outside of the covenant, Mr. Analyst, speaking of Za'Darius Smith, now, you know, the target at which to shoot in the division is obviously the Green Bay Packers, and you know, with they got that Georgia linebacker, one of two high picks for the from the Bulldogs defense, adroitly executed by super special Goody. But until they start playing the games, we don't really know how good these players are going to be. With that said, it's my belief, and do you see it the same way? When Za'Darius Smith didn't play, Preston Smith, I'm not going to say was an L, but I mean, he really was a different kind of guy. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I think so. And again, that's what happens when you have, you have a lot of role players, so to speak, or you have guys that work very well together. My God, there was a book written about this with you see it in the NBA where you know, you can't have just all superstars because then everybody wants the ball all the time. Yeah. And everybody, you know, no one wants to really, we got to have some guys that are willing to do the work and take a back seat, so to speak, and work well and know what their role is. I think Smith was definitely one of those guys. So when he had, Preston, when he had someone like that, then, he, you know, like Zadarius getting all the attention, then he was able to do his thing. And so, it'll definitely be interesting to see how well he does without, you know, without Zadarius. I mean, let's face it, we got some health things too. Our two best defensive linemen, right? You know, we got to keep them healthy and have them stay healthy. And so, you know, but all things being equal, if everybody's up and going, I think we're going to have, you know, two really, really good defensive linemen that can get after the quarterback.
Analyst, is it fair to say that the Vikings, you know, because of the art of deception and unpredictability, because everything is so new with these coaches, that favors the Vikings maybe through the first three games of the season until coaches get film and, you know, then things even out. But that also gives the Vikings an opportunity to recognize, well, they now know that we know that they know that we know. So the Vikings get an opportunity to change too. But with all that said, you know, all the new with this team, it's new with an abundance of talent. So it's not like completely new and a bunch of L's and a reclamation project. So if, simplistically speaking, Pete, if Zadarius Smith and Daniil stay healthy, and the rookie corner from Clemson can play, and he's better than just good, you know, but obviously not elite, but he's better than just good, this Vikings team could be pretty good in 2022.
Yeah, they can be. I think Booth is going to be a very, very good player. I think seeing what he did in college and how smart he is as a corner, body position wise, knowing what he's going to get. I just of all the guys that we draft, I think, you know, Luke Sean is going to be, he's unbelievable, right? He's a physical freak, and I think as a person, he's also extremely unique in what he wants to do. You know, he's very simple. He's not flashy. He just wants to get out there and play the game. So I'm extremely excited to see him take the field, especially next to a guy like Harrison Smith. But I really, really like the way that Booth plays. And I think he has a lot of potential. A rookie corner, yeah, you're going to have – it's going to be a long year. It's going to be a tough year. And to go back to your point, that's where the preseason is going to be interesting, right? I mean, it's going to be keep it simple. Let's take a look at see how guys do. And then you have those 2 weeks before the first game to really drill everything in. And so, yeah, you're going to have that game plan solid for week one, and then the film gets out, so week two might be a little bit different. The disadvantage is going to come, I think, you know, week three in that area when, you know, if you have a system in place, you already know that A goes to B goes to C goes to D, and then all of this is going to be new. And it takes a season or two to really get an entire scheme put in. It does. It takes a while. I know when we switched to Ted Cottrell and you know, the defensive coordinator, we got through the first year, but it was the second year that we finally got everything that he wanted to do in. So, how quickly we can add things, defensively and offensively from a schematic standpoint, you know, that'll be the trick, I think, throughout the year.
Lastly, Peter, and thanks for the time, my brother, why are the Vikings games versus the Lions always freaking meat grinders every single season?
You know why? Because I think the Lions believe they can beat us.
Right.
No, I'm serious.
No, I know you're right.
I don't say that flippantly because, you know, it's a team where, you know, whenever – this is the difference between a winning and losing team in a very simplistic way. When you're a team, and I remember like us in 98, right, when if things didn't go well, everybody was like, all right, someone's going to step up and make a play. Who is it going to be? But when you're on a team like the Lions who have had victory snatched from, you know, just how many times over and over, when things don't go well, it's, oh, here we go again. And that is a subtle but an amazing difference. And will they be able to turn that around? I think they have that attitude against us. When they play us, especially at their place, right, they do feel like they can beat us. They know they can hang with us. They really feel that. And so you get a little, you get a little bit of a different team in that respect. And I think they look forward to playing the Vikings, right? I mean, they start out, I believe with the Eagles and then the Commanders, right? And so our game will be their first road game. So we'll see how those first two games go for them, who's healthy and who's not. But, that team has confidence that they can hang with us. So, it's just like us and the Packers, right? We always seem to, you know, we know we can beat them, especially in their place. And it's just a different game, and then you see a kind of a different team whenever you play them.
That's my man,
the analyst.
Can't wait to call those games with you. Have a good day.
I know, man. You know, not much longer, bro.
Yes, sir.
Not much longer. Let's get rolling.
Pete Bursich, analyst for the Vikings Radio Network. The Twins, Timberwolves, and a life techie, Aaron Gleeman, about 20 minutes.
KFAN.
Canterbury Park brings you sports essentials. Just get things moving, because don't look now, the Twins are pulling away from the Guardians.
Number one!
Or not. They crushed Cleveland yesterday 11-1 thanks to home runs from Sanchez, Gordon, and this guy.
Got a two-game suspension. Here's a high fly deep left field, and looking up is Kwan. That ball is gone. Carlos Correa adds to the run total for the Twins. A two-run home run, and it is 9-0.
Sonny Gray turned back the clock. 7 innings pitched, 3 hits, no earned runs. Now that puts the Twins 3 games up in the division, which is great, but they also have 4 more games with the Guardians before leaving Cleveland, including a doubleheader today. So it could all come crashing down, but for now, 3 games up in the division.
Why would you look at it as it could all come crashing down?
I don't know. I'm just making observations.
Right, and it's not you, but it's just, I don't know, man. It's just a majority of people with one of two ways to go will sway the way of great win. It could come crashing down, as opposed to great win. Let's double up on it and get a sweep today. I don't know. It probably doesn't bear conversation, but it's around all of us every single day, and everybody knows what I'm talking about. Sonny Gray, mesmerizing last night. The Sanchez 3-run piece early deflated the crowd. Copyright Jensen Lewis from Bally Sports North, former Cleveland pitcher. And the depth of the, we're going to get into this with the techie about 10-15 minutes from now, but the depth of the Twins offense, and they're without Polanco and Jose, you know, this is fire of fairness in Jose Ramirez act. Jose ain't right, and he's their best player, and he got himself nicked up 2 weeks ago, and He might have missed some games, but then he came here and then he was kind of an L, except for maybe a couple of at bats. And so therefore, their best player ain't hitting a sticking right now. Bieber between the two teams appears to me to be the best pitcher. And both bullpens have a bevy of talented arms. I mean, fireballers and guys that, you know, with whom you feel over the long haul you can win. But both bullpens blow up. Like they get this consistent bit going, then all of a sudden, you know, somebody rolls in and gives up 5 runs. So these teams, they're in the same fishbowl. They're just under different rocks. But I do like the Twins better than the Guardians for the balance of the season. We still got to keep our eyes on these White Sox. They just got Tim Anderson back. Dallas Keuchel is heading back to the rotation. So these dirty Southsiders, they're going to have say in this thing before it's over.
Number two.
Now, we talked about baseball fights yesterday with Lavelle, and the Angels and Mariners got into a true line brawl, Donnybrook, you know, whatever you want to call it. But now, as of last night, the sentences have actually come down. 12 people in total, I say people, not players, have been suspended because of the incident, including the Angels manager, Phil Nevin, 10 games. And then the Mariners outfielder, Jesse Winker, for 7 games, who not only was throwing punches, but was also giving the Angels fans a 2-finger salute, double birds, tributes to Stone Cold Steve Austin, or just letting them know they're number one. Do you think this is too much, too little? Where do you land on the laying the hammer down for these brawls?
Well, it's impossible for me to answer until I know which players got. I mean, did they all get the same amount of days? That'd be impossible.
No, I think right. They're all varying amount of days.
Correct. I mean, I watched that thing four times. And, you know, you got there was a cat named Crawford who should get multiple games. I mean, he's throwing haymakers. You got a guy whose last name I think is Robinson, but he's trying to look like Ken Griffey Jr. with the hat backwards and a certain type of shades. He inflamed things. Winker should get the most. And there was a coach, an assistant for the Anaheimers, who wanted to murder every piece of humanity he could get his hands on. And I don't know his name. He just had this all red pullover on. So it's, yeah, I got no problem with suspensions en masse. The problem is that it happened like we've seen before with baseball melees or fracases. But see, then as they started to morph apart, that's when your guy Crawford or somebody got pissed off and it started again. So there were probably 3 to 4 stop and starts. And the ones who inflamed it and caused it to continue, well, they need to get multiple days or more than most of them because of the idiot factor. I mean, you saw the thing it stopped, my man. Yet, you know, you couldn't recognize pride goes before the fall and back off. You just had to come in there and get it again. So therefore, I'd need to know the names to know if the time. What's up, Techie? Welcome back, Tech. Good to see you, brother. Man, I miss you every single day you're gone. To know if the time matches the crime.
Number 3.
Oh, and by the way, even the Angels interpreter got suspended for 2 what? Games. Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
I swear. So he must have been involved at some point.
Well, I got to watch it a fifth time now. Yeah. I got to find there's the interpreter.
There's a front row. Someone had their video up in the front row, like right behind home plate, and they got the whole thing.
Is it the bomb?
It was incredible.
Yeah, I got to see that. Yeah. I got to find the interpreter. Would this be like a Japanese, Korean, or whatever interpreter?
I'd be willing to bet Spanish.
Yeah.
By the name, who I just
figure it out.
X'd out the page. So, anyways,
number 3.
Former Vikings running back Adrian Peterson and Le'Veon Bell.
How about this?
Have signed contracts for a boxing exhibition at formerly Staples Center in L.A. July 30th.
Hmm.
Does this capture your interest at all?
Man, I was thinking about it last night. And, you know, I'm trying to get Adrian on the radio show for this, but I can't find him. It's just really difficult to put it the right way. Because you don't know what their financial situations are. Now, you'll get 7.8 rubes guessing, you know, that for whatever the reason that Adrian may not be a man of means, given the amount of money specifically made during his career. I don't really know about Le'Veon Bell. Is there's a desperation feel to this to me that you got a couple of people who are out of the spotlight, probably won't be back in the league, and they're craving the spotlight and attention. Now, I might share this at 11:40 or tomorrow. I got to vet it out a little bit, but down Mankato way, within the last, let's say, 9 years, you know, it's Adrian. See, I got to, you know, when I say things like this, I have to be wary of the obscure.coms sitting back lazily listening to an announcer who's not paid by a football team to call games. He's paid by a radio station to call games, so I can do their job for them. So I'm just going to lay it out that Adrian absolutely was in a fight with a member of the Minnesota Vikings at training camp in Mankato, inside maybe Gage Hall or something like that. But I don't exactly know how the fight went. But see, once I can get intel on how the fight went from the individual he fought, you know, to see how the uppercut looked and the roundhouse and the jab.
Time to drive south.
Is he a southpaw? Stuff like if they put betting up on it and I get intel like that, you're going to make a paycheck, big boy, because I'm going to do it for you.
Okay.
Number 4.
Speaking of making a drive down south to Gemstone Joseph's, the Stanley Cup Finals wrapped up this past weekend, and you know what that means for every state in the Midwest but Minnesota. It's time to gamble on next year. And obviously favorites, Avs to repeat, plus 400. I still don't understand how the pluses work. You're going to have to guide me through that again.
It's very but the easy. Point, okay.
Yeah, it's, you bet 100. If it's a plus.
Honey, do you want me to explain or not? You just said okay. You don't understand.
I think I do, but I'm not confident about it.
Then go ahead and give it to me.
If it's plus 400 like the Avs, then if I bet $100, I would get $400.
You would win $400 and collect $5.
Okay.
So eliminate the zeros, make it 4-1. Makes it a lot easier. Okay. So they are four to one. So you're right. You bet 100. You got to give Gemstone. I like that, by the way.
Thank you.
You got to give Gemstone your 100. And then you got to wait 9 months to potentially get their 500, which seems pragmatic. So that's how you look at it. What's next?
Well, the point of me bringing this up was that the Wild are tied for the 6th best odds to win the Stanley Cup at plus 1,800.
Okay.
Or so would that be 18-1?
Bam. Which okay. means you bet 100 on the Wild. They win the Cup. How much do you scoop?
You would scoop $1,900.
Incorrect. 1,800
plus. You would collectively get 1,900.
You would get their 18. Oh, I see. Yes. 1,900. Right.
Okay.
My bad.
Are those odds worth driving to Gemstone Joseph's? Is that something you're? Because no. We don't bet favorites. No. I understand.
No. There are two things to share here.
Okay.
One, I mean, unless you have so much liquid and or capital that you can bet $20,000 on something like this and not care about it for 9 months, I'm not. You know, most people are betting. Or if you're betting $10, $20, $30 on a $30, $40, $50, $60-1 haymaker, well, that's fun. You can follow it during the course of the year. But future bets like this where you give somebody your money and they get to keep it for 9 months. Oh, and by the way, you're probably going to lose. Those bets are L's unless you're taking swings at massive things. Secondly, 18-1 is too skinny for me in the Wild. We don't know the goaltending situation. We don't know if Fiala's going to be on the team. If Fiala's not going to be on the team, and I would bet he's not going to be on the team, we don't know who we're going to get. So, I got him last year at 20 or 21. Molesky and I got him at 21, and that was early in the season. Now, we felt that those were fair value-oriented odds. We also got Brunette's team at 6-1 at the same time. And that's because we thought they were going to go to the Cup. Well, 6-1 on the Panthers turned out to be absurdly skinny. But we did that in January. So February, March, April, May, June. So we only had to wait 5 months and change to take our L. Really, we only had to wait 3.5 months and change to take that L and get some wood-burning fire fodder. You understand what I'm saying?
I get you.
Anything else?
Number 5.
A poll from SB Nation came out today from Vikings fans grading the offseason so far. Draft, Kirk extension, etc. 61% gave the Vikings a B grade, 21% the second highest with a C, 15% with an A. So there's no fatalism. There's no giant Fs or giant Ls. Are you surprised by these results, or is this pretty much par for the course?
No, I don't follow that. And I know why they do it, and I know why websites do it, because they do generate a lot of clicks. People like to read polls. They like to read, like the Athletic with Aaron Gleeman, football-wise. The Athletic, it just does a terrific job. Specifically, this cat based in Seattle named Mike Sando, who I've gotten to know throughout the years. I mean, I know Mike. So I know a few people to whom he's plugged in. So therefore, now that I know 3 names of people where he gets his intel, well, then I'm like, I'm reading every word and I'm reading it twice because I respect the hell out of all 3 of those people. When like he does something on every team or grades or stuff like that, I read it closely. With other stuff, I just don't know enough about where they're pulling their information from. And thus, it offers up functioning clickability, which is good for their websites. But my take is with the rookies, the Vikings with Lewis Seen, they're not going to lose on Lewis Seen unless he just perpetually gets hurt. That's a sharp cat who I know can play and belongs in the NFL. After that, I got to see it all. Harrison Phillips coming here from Buffalo. I mean, I got to see Harrison Phillips play nose in a 3-4 because, A, we haven't seen a 3-4 base around here in 40 years. And I got all frothy and wound up over Dalvin Tomlinson last year and was left a little cold. Now, you know, the Pierce cat who came in here with a ski mask, he was playing a position, too, that may have compromised Dalvin. So, again, that's going to be different. So it's, yeah, I'm not a grade guy. And likewise for Aaron Gleeman, who joins 9 to noon in studio around the corner. He is the Twins techie, and he covers the Twins for The Athletic and TheAthletic.com. A lot of cool things, including some Timberwolves to chat about with AG when 9 to noon continues at KFAM.